When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I was in rabbit holes galore with this book.
He just does such a great job of making the characters feel alive rather than just vehicle for plot device.
I think that's my one thing. Now, to be fun with it, that's why it's not a perfect book, because I found one thing that I just disagree with. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another Tutor Ramble episode. I am one of your hosts, Austin.
And I'm your other host, Richard.
Today, Rich and I are discussing the book by Neil Gaiman, American Gods. We are going to be giving a spoiler-free review for about 10 to 15 minutes, then getting right into spoilers. We will give you fair warning before then. And Rich, I'm introducing this one because this book excited me a lot more than did you liked it.
I liked the book.
Get into it.
I enjoyed it. Thoroughly good book.
I love this book, and the most important thing I'm looking forward to is the thought-provoking discussion. I can't wait for that. There's a lot to discuss with this book, but Rich, to give some people a snippet here, you and I had a recording we did, came out on the pod already, about separating the art versus the artist.
Yeah.
Neil Gaiman's under, there's allegations, doesn't look good.
Gross and bad, not good.
And we had a whole discussion about separating the art versus the artist, and we're reviewing this book. We separate the art versus the artist. We're here to enjoy what was written, not support or not support. Just authors do good, bad things. We're just reading the book for as it is, discussing American Gods for what was written.
However, there were a couple moments in this book where it was hard for me to personally separate the art from the artist.
So that's fair.
We'll talk about that when it comes
up. We had the same reaction, actually, when we read scenes like that. But first thing, to give everybody some info on American Gods, this book is by Neil Gaiman, published in 2001. It won the Nebula, Hugo, Locus, and Bram Stoker Awards, a bunch of awards. Rich, you've never won an award in your life. Is that true?
Close enough.
Elementary school stuff, like, yeah, doesn't count.
Doesn't count.
But this book's got a lot of them. And if you guys have, oh, bless you.
Thank you.
That's American Gods. Be bless. Bless up.
You could try.
So this book, American Gods, very renowned, came out in early 2000s. And Rich, any info on the book that you knew going in of, hey, what was your perception of what is this book by Neil Gaiman? This was our first Neil Gaiman book.
Yeah. So how I know Neil Gaiman is I knew he was a friend of Terry Pratchett. And Terry Pratchett is, I'll say it, he's my favorite author. Period. I'll just lay that statement.
Richard,
I love him.
I'll actually join you with that.
He's my favorite.
Yeah.
I love him. He is the GOAT. And I'm like, oh, wow, he's friends with Neil Gaiman. Okay, Neil Gaiman must be a pretty good author if they do works together. And so I know about Good Omens. Good Omens, they co-wrote together. And so been wanting to read that. It's on my shelf. I'll get to it. So I was thinking, hey, everyone loves American Gods. It's one of his most critically acclaimed books. This would be a place to start for Neil Gaiman. That's where I was at.
I think our experience is it's a great place to start if people haven't read Neil Gaiman.
Yeah.
And to give some info about what this book is actually about, like what do you go in spoiler free? I'll start us off, jump in, Rich. Mm-hmm. Actually, Dennis from our patron gave a great example. It shouldn't be called American Gods. It should be called Middle American Gods. Because in a lot of ways, this book is showing you Middle America and the concept of what it's asking, what is America as a culture? What do Americans like, and what do they worship? It's a book about, especially taking place in the late 90s, early 2000s, that kind of atmosphere. It's a book asking the question, who do you believe in? And that question's being asked to America. So if you are an American yourself reading this book, you'll see a lot of things like the House of Rock and a lot of features and actual places that were now fictionalized into this book that you'll get a huge kick off out of, especially if you live in places like Minnesota.
Yeah. And so specifically about Middle America, there's a difference in cultural assimilation that happens with Americans' history. So there's a kind of commonplace of immigrants from different cultures go to one of the bigger cities. Typically, their culture can more easily be preserved in the sense of there's a lot more of you. You can have your own enclave, and there will be your original culture and your gods can be preserved in something like a big city versus the Middle America when different groups immigrated to America at different times and they immigrated to Middle America. A lot of their cultures and traditions basically die off from their homeland because they have there's different circumstances of why they would assimilate to the surrounding culture.
You guys can all tell this book, there's going to be a thick discussion. If you read this book, there will be a lot to talk about, even if you don't love it, because it's not the most emotionally riling book. That you're not going to be super stoked and excited. And the way that we're describing this for people, it's not high fantasy. It's low fantasy elements where gods exist. There are old gods and new gods. There's some elements there, but you're not going to get any crazy magic systems. You're not going to get anything special in that way. This is light, low fantasy that actually takes place in America, real, or he changes the names of town, a town, for example, so he doesn't put flack on a town, but he uses real places and places he's been and then adds some fantastical elements.
This is definitely a cool book to read if you don't, one, if you don't live in the United States and you want to see something other than New York City and LA, or get a little taste of American culture that's not just the two big coastal cities.
You know, get down yonder.
Get down yonder. Get over, you know, explore a little bit of the flyover states.
Yeah, a little yeller. So, and to give a preface of, hey, what are you actually getting into? What character you're reading? This takes place where a character named Shadow is coming out of 3 years of prison. He's a very deadpan character. And it's not a cynical, whatever word you want to use. I guess the book is just more of a satirical, dark comedy-esque. Dry humor, deadpan character where Shadow, our main character, is called Shadow because he's literally in a way a shadow of a person. He doesn't have he's not a very active character.
He doesn't have a lot of beliefs for himself. It's more, he's kind of always a follower. He listens and he follows. He's kind of empty inside himself.
And the inciting incident of this book, this is surface level, is he's getting out of prison and his wife dies. And that is, the book starts like that. And his reaction to that is very deadpan. And it affects him, but also doesn't affect him in a way that you would expect for a normal human to react to the love of your life dying. And there's more to that as well, but we'll get into that in spoilers. But that is like chapter one stuff.
Yeah. If that like couple pages into chapter one.
Yeah. So, Rich, for you, when you're going to this book, we actually read the first line in one of our first line contests. Do you remember? It was in our first video. And I kind of want to, do you want to read it again just to see if, I don't know. We don't do this enough. Do you want to go ahead and read?
Sure, I'll read the chapter.
The first paragraph. It's a great first paragraph.
First paragraph or the intro?
Not this part.
Shadow had done 3 years in prison. He was big enough and he looked don't fuck with me enough that his biggest problem was killing time. So he kept himself in shape and taught himself coin tricks and thought a lot about how much he loved his wife.
Which I guess, it doesn't turn out so well for his wife, but
no,
that intro right there of just kind of giving the shadows a don't fuck with me enough can kind of give you a picture of what you're going to do with American Gods. But we'll get into our rating in a second, too, but who cares what we think? What did others think online, Rich?
Well, it clearly won a bunch of awards, so a lot of people thought it was pretty okay.
Pretty damn okay, yeah. We had this for our Patreon Book Club of the Month. They select Murdy. Shout out to Murdy, who has visited the House of Rock in person, so she was so interested in reading the book because it had the House of Rock literally in it. For those who don't know, Rich, how can you explain what the House of Rock is.
They don't deserve an explanation. It deserves to be experienced.
True.
It's an American anomaly. And no pictures. You shouldn't. It needs to be lived.
Just know, Neil Gaiman, when he's not fictionalizing or making this a fantasy of the House of Rock's actual place in America. Yeah. And it's just...
It's weird. It's crazy. Definitely on the top 10 list of weird things in America.
What's number one?
It's a lot of things. I don't know. This is up there.
I was going to say, like... So, with American Got...
All of Hollywood. They're weird there. They're real weird.
So, with American Gods and Murdy, again, shout out to Murdy, but our patrons in book club loved it. If you guys want to join us for a book club in the future, we read books like this, fantasy, sci-fi, all that. You can join Rich and I for those discussions.
It's fun.
It's a lot of fun. And other people online, so we had... Dennis as well from our Patreon really enjoyed it. He had a lot of great insights. But Patrick Ruffus, guy, you're not the biggest fan of his books.
Yeah.
he loved this, and he was saying that the biggest thing this book brings is some atmosphere, and he loved Neil Gaiman's prose and just how he described things. That was a big, big love from him. And it got a 4.11 on Goodreads, if that counts for anything.
It shouldn't, because it's not the Rambler rating, but...
Exactly. And right before we say our Rambler rating, Rich, I want to see if you think this is accurate. So for people who would like this book, I think people who love the movie, or the book turned into movie, No Country for Old Men. I think if that connected with you, if you love that movie, if you like that book, this book will be for you. You won't dislike the book.
That's fair. Both atmospheric, both lacking in some things, but excel in other areas. Similar vibes.
Yes, and also part of it's the atmosphere and some of the messages there collide. And obviously, if you like British humor, and if you're Terry Pratchett adjacent, I think there's some, it's not the same as Terry Pratchett, not the same humor, very different. But Neil Gaiman has more of a, well, how would you explain it? How is he different, but also having that British humor?
Terry Pratchett, I think, is best known for his witty humor. That it's witty lines that are layered jokes. This is more situational humor of an absurd scene. It's far closer to Douglas Adams humor than it is Terry Pratchett humor. At least how I would say.
So kind of make it situational. Situational, like, this is absurd because of the situation. It's maybe not the line itself, but the reactions.
Exactly.
Awesome. So, Rich, what is your spoiler-free Richard Rambler rating?
My official Richard Rambler rating for this book is a 3.75. Very good. A very good book.
Yes, we have words associated with our ratings themselves. So, for 3.75 is very good for you.
Very good.
Wasn't great, wasn't really great, but you liked it well enough. Very good book.
Yeah.
I love this book, as we already started, and I give this... a 4.75 out of 5 stars.
Damn.
The big thing for me, this book nearly floored me. I think the worst part about this book is I actually set the book down 2 times. I put it down physically, went on for a week, came back to it a week later, twice. Which, and if you're looking at it like that, like, oh, how is this an amazing book for you? The reason it's not a 5 where I'm not floored by it is because emotionally speaking, it's not the most grabbing, gripping book, but what this does for me is even reading this, I think we read this now several weeks ago or a week plus ago since us recording this. It's one of these books that's sticking with me, and anytime somebody reads it, I want to discuss it with them because the take that it has on America, but also the message and I think the plot, a lot of the categories we're going to go through, it's masterful in how it's constructed. And the book sits with me more than one. It wasn't a page turner. This is not a page turner book. It's a book that I will always think of. Love it for that.
I'm hope maybe after our discussion with it, I'll have more to think about on this.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. So you know what? Are you ready then? Well, but before,
I actually will say, I did up my score after our book club meeting. I initially had, I had one category that I actually deliberately changed by a significant degree because of our conversation.
You'll have to tell us when it gets to that category.
We'll do.
Okay, Rich, do you want to give the spoiler warning? I'll give you the honors.
If you don't care about spoilers, continue watching. But if you do, like a normal person, this is your time to click off. Bye-bye. Bye, people. Now it's time for spoilers. You've been thoroughly warned.
All right, we're with the cool kids. Okay.
Yeah, we're with the cool people.
We can turn off that facade. Oh, my God.
Oh, God. Turn off the YouTube persona.
Okay, now let's get fucking real here. Okay. Okay, so what did you think about the emotional impact? What did you rate it out of 5 stars?
I give it the same thing, 3.75.
3.75?
Very good. Leans there. For the most part, and I say that because a couple moments kind of pulled me in, and I was interested in the mystery, and the atmosphere made me really enjoy it. I was having a good time. If you ask me connection with certain characters all over, I would say that's about where it is.
I completely agree. I give it 3.75. As much as I love this book, this is my lowest category. 3.75 out of 5 stars. Same reasons. It was interesting, mystery element to it. But yeah. What emotions was it going for you?
So, for the most part, it's trying to go for, it's of course, humorous, but also, I think it's going for a more dreary atmosphere, and there's a sense of
longing,
a dour feeling, the inevitable march of time. There's something about endings. It feels like it's just marching toward an inevitable ending.
Mm.
And that kind of feeling of everything's dying. And I won't see what's coming next. That's kind of like, it's the end times now. Like, that's what I was feeling. And there's kind of a morose idea of some things that are good and you know that it's going to end. Even the good stuff is just fleeting. So that's the emotions and vibes I was getting from it. Certain characters, definitely you laugh more at and you enjoy some of their lines. There's some really absurd scenes. There was also some great stuff of, it made me feel like happy to be an American. Of like, yeah, that's the feeling I want to have while I'm in America. That sometimes that's how the community feels to me, and how I feel loved and appreciated in my own country.
That's awesome. And maybe was it the what did he sum it up with, that America's made of three things? It was McDonald's, the Tonight Show, and the dollar, the greenback dollar, yeah. Were the three things that unite us all, which is strange because this was made in the 2000s, where the Tonight Show like was a unity thing. Like, everybody yeah. watched the Tonight Show at night. At the time, was it Jay Leno? Before that was Johnny Carson, right?
Yeah,
but just because now media exists everywhere, like Tonight Show is still there, but I mean, McDonald's and the dollar, I think, are still relevant for those three. But that's one cool thing. I don't want to jump ahead to thought-provoking this, but it was just cool to see how America's even changed in the past 24 years, 23 if it came out 2001, but sure. 25-ish years or so, how much America's changed. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you on emotion-wise. It was going for, there was this dreary feeling, yeah, dreary feeling, but it got me to chuckle several times. It's got this nice, dry humor to it that was fun to read, but it really wasn't, I wasn't eager to always read the book. I will say that I'll talk. This would be my most negative portion of the review, even though I really liked it and connected with I was reading the book, didn't have an issue. I don't think anybody's going to pull up this book and just be like, man, what a thriller.
Yeah. The only time I start actually wanting to read the book where it was harder for me to put it down was when he got to Lakeside Town. That was the point of, like, I was actually starting to get really invested and kept wanting to read. Up until that point, it kind of felt like, especially like plot wise of just next thing happened, like, it was a mystery, but then don't care as
kind
much.
Of meandering.
Exactly.
I see what you mean.
And yeah. So it was yeah. really easy to put it down of like, okay, he met this character, and now we're gonna move on to the next character, so I can put it down now.
Yeah, it didn't connect. Like, I didn't know where this was going initially. I was kind of unconvinced on, okay, we're just kind of around. We were with Wednesday. What's the point? Then even when he initially got to the town, that's when I first got hooked to with the mystery of what's happening to the children. How is this connecting to? You had the two big elements, to both the gods in the background and then this little town in America, and how that came together at the end. That I guess the most emotional part for me just got better and better because every piece of the puzzle started to come together, and I guess we'll get the plot for that. But emotion-wise, that's just, it was really good. I mean, we talked more negative, but just to show that that's my, the worst thing I could say about this book is I could put it down a lot.
Sure.
But want to move on to, right before we move on, I had this note because I wanted to mention this because we hinted at this earlier, the separating art from artist.
Ah,
the emotional
yes,
part.
Important to mention it here.
Yeah, I have the line here from the book that I think was for both of us, because for those who don't know, the art versus artist video that we had about Neil Gaiman, where
can you read a book without your knowledge of the author affecting your enjoyment of that work?
Your emotion. Like, it's perfect for this. Our category of, hey, does the book emotionally, if it's going for humor, what is this scene going for, and what are you thinking in the back of your head? Because here's the three paragraphs where maybe it was harder to separate the art from the artist. To preface this, this is because Neil Gaiman, there's sexual assault allegations, and so this was recently in our mind. We did a whole video on it. So when you're reading this book, that was in our head.
Yeah, and it's not just the sexual assault allegations. It's a big part of it is the age gap that Neil Gaiman, you can even put aside the assault for a second and go the kind of gross age gap that Neil Gaiman has in many of his relationships. These paragraphs kind of.
Well, I'm curious. Yeah. I want your reaction to this too, because when I read, we talked about this off camera. So here's the one of the portions. There was a couple. Here's one. Wednesday touched the back of her hand fleetingly with the tips of his fingers, leaving crumbs of salt on her skin. She made no attempt to wipe them off. "To us," he said, his voice almost an inaudible rumble, "it shall be a pleasure place, palace." The waitress looked at him. She bit her thin lips, hesitated, then nodded and fled for the kitchen. "Come on," said Shadow. "She looks barely legal." "I've never been overly concerned about legality," Wednesday told him. "Not as long as I get what I want. Sometimes the nights are long and cold, and I need her, not as an end in herself, but to wake me up a little. Even King David knew that there was one easy prescription to get warm blood flowing through an old frame. Take one virgin, call me in the morning." So that whole thing, just talking about that legality, like, in your head, were you thinking at the time, like, that whole age gap you were talking
100%.
About? Sorry, I butchered that, by the way. I'll do better in the future with reading. But yeah.
No, the age gap and the legality aspect is like just gone. No. Especially with the specific allegation of the one of the girls that accused Neil Gaiman of sexual assault said that basically they met when she was 17, like 16, 17, and then they had a relationship at 19 kind of thing. So little grooming thing there. So yeah, I couldn't really separate that. It was in the forefront of my mind. I just like, oh God, gross.
And we just talked about it too. So that's one thing when reading any books, how much did your rating get affected by what you know about the author, by our biases, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it affected your enjoyment overall of the book, or were you able to separate it pretty well?
Oh yeah. I don't think it really affected my enjoyment of the book overall one way or the other. It was just a scene that was like, yeah, I can't really separate that. Like, I'm now thinking of the artist and I can't put that away.
To be fair, like, that's when I talk to you, I can't separate my hate for you. So when I'm talking to you, it's like I kind of have to keep it respectful for the camera.
Of course. Yeah. No. And, you know, when I talk to you, I'm trying to think of how do I treat you with respect and dignity when I know I've read your works and I don't respect anything you've written? It's hard.
That's so hurtful. You've read so many of my chapter ones, like 50 of them.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to go on to thought-provokingness?
Yeah.
Okay. Strap in. So thought-provokingness, what did you rate this out of 5 stars? And just to clarify, with thought-provokingness, we're talking about the themes, the message, how much the book sticks with you for this category.
This is going to be the one that we're going to disagree on the most.
Oh, is this not the one that increased the most after the discussion?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
I still give this one a 3.5. I think it's good.
Oh.
Yeah.
So this is our biggest. Wow.
Yeah.
I give this a 5-star. Everything here floored me.
Not floor me.
Do you want to start or do you want me to go?
Let's have you start.
So, okay, a couple of things with this book. The one thing that we hinted at of what is America is what this whole book's going for. And we didn't mention this yet. We should have probably mentioned this, but another book, Small Gods by Terry Pratchett. has a similar magic system where it has a
gods get power from the belief that they have, the number of believers, rather than the reverse or anything like that.
Just like this book.
To be fair, in some similar way, I think it's kind of like with Malazan as well. Like, there's an element to that.
Yeah, there's an element of Malazan, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Point being.
Is it Malazan or Malazan? Malazan.
Malazan. Malazan.
You're reading Dead House Gates. Do you have any update for them?
I'm halfway through. I like it more than the first book.
Neat.
So.
Neat.
There's at least that.
So when it comes to this book, the reason it floored me, so first when it's exploring what is America, the religious themes, and the answers that it has. So I have a couple of things that I want to read off after we have more of a discussion about this, but Wednesday kind of had a soliloquy at the beginning where Shadow was asking him as they were journeying around, like, what makes up America? And Wednesday was answering that it's, you know, Shadow was saying, wait, not churches? Aren't there churches everywhere? So the fascinating thing about this book is when people look at America, it's always involving the actual religion because it's a big part of America.
Yeah.
It's American Gods talks about everything except Jesus, or except there's a little epigraph at the end, or not epigraph, sorry, epilogue at the end, where an afterword where
it's a removed segment.
Exactly, yeah. Which was interesting to read, but Wednesday kind of answers to him that, you know, there's as many dentist offices as there are churches. There's something else that makes up America, and Wednesday's theory is that, look, America's like nowhere else where you can travel down any road and go on any weird street, and then you find a random attraction with sticks and toothpicks that they made a museum out of off of Highway 958. Like, America's a weird place of just random conglomerations of attraction. Like, Wednesday was just saying, like, isn't that weird that America does this? And so that was Wednesday's theory. And starting off with that preface of, like, what is America? And I think part of Neil Gaiman's answer, a lot is being discussed here, but the thing that hooked with me the most is America as a culture. We get in this book, we can see the perspective of a slave coming to America. We see Leif Erikson and the Vikings coming to America. We get the perspective of Arabic taxi drivers. We get soon-to-be Native Americans who came across the Bering Strait. And then we also get the perspective of Henselman, who's just, you know, this in America, he ends up being a god, but these Americans who have been entrenched there for a while. And all these people that come to America quickly lose faith in the gods that they once knew, whether forcibly because they were taken from the Atlantic slave trade, or the mammoth god that they believed in, the Native Americans came to believe. They did believe the mammoth god, and it was lost quickly. And one of Neil Gaiman's points here is that America is a shifting land of belief in gods, where America can be a very future-looking nation where we always look to, hey, what's the next thing? Whether that's to improve or not improve. Like, it could be good and bad. We're always changing. It could be a huge positive. America can always redefine itself. But it can also be a negative that, do we not reflect enough in the past? Do we not look back to what our foundation, but what the gods we respected were? Hey, did we believe in something that was good, but then lose faith in that good thing? Now, are we believing in something better? It's good because we can make good and positive changes. America was able to redefine, hey, get rid of slavery. Great. Then what if something that we looked at, like a Native American god, that mammoth believed that they had? What if there was some value in the believing in that mammoth god when coming to America? So one of Neil Gaiman's points is looking at all these different cultures that come to America and almost create this new kind of belief. What are we believing? Because going to Nietzsche, I always say his name wrong, the philosopher Nietzsche, who was saying God is dead. When Nietzsche was saying God is dead, he was kind of saying this as a warning to God is dead and what replaces God. And so I think American Gods is a modern take on looking at that nihilism and trying to create existentialism out of that, where he's taking a look at America and, hey, if God is that, if America's a land of, we say we believe in God. Remember the Easter portion of this where there's the Easter bunny? Wednesday and the Easter bunny were having a conversation in this book where Wednesday was telling the Easter bunny, like, hey, do they actually believe in you, or do they believe in the ritual of the Easter bunny? Do they believe in you, or the facade of you, the thing that you are to the culture? Like, do they believe in the eggs and the fun? And when Christmas, are we really saying, hey, we're sitting down here as Christians going, and respecting the birth of Jesus Christ, or are we happy with the gifts? Do we like the ritual tradition more than the God itself?
Do we believe in Santa Claus more than we do Jesus Christ?
Right. And so with the conversation with the Easter bunnies, even we say we believe these things, but the conversations we have in the past about belief versus conviction, Americans can say we believe one thing, but what is our actual conviction? What we can say, hey, this is what we value. The old gods is what we value. And all these Odin, we see all these perspectives, but the new god and the villains in this, like media, television, kind of looking at some vices of where are we really convicted as Americans? What do we came here to redefine ourselves, all different cultures, making this melting pot of what are we now? And are we believing in something actually good? And so taking a reflective measure on, and a different message than Small Gods, another book that I think is a 5 out of 5 star for thought-provokingness. But that's one of the reasons why, I don't want to keep rambling, but just one of why it looks at, I think it has a take on America that is sitting with me forever of like, wow, that is, I never looked at it that way. And also the way Neil Gaiman explains it and the way the story is constructed, there's no better way to put it of like showing us all these different types of gods, Slavic and Slavic and Norse, et cetera. What was that? Chernobog? I think that was one of the Slavic gods. But essentially, that's part of the reason
Chernobog?
Why. Yeah, Chernobog. That's part of the reason why it floored me. Thoughts on that? And just I'll stop blabbering and give you a second. Okay. I love it.
Part of all of that is the reason why I'm not floored with that is the idea that America is just, you know, we actually have no beliefs, or just beliefs in, you know, McDonald's and money and whatever comes around, that we actually, because it touches on an idea of that I've heard a lot is America doesn't really have a culture. We're a collection of cultures. One, I do think that's wrong for the most part. I think we actually do have a culture. We have a history as a people. Immigration and different cultures have definitely a factor. But ultimately, like pure numbers wise, we're a country of founders. Like the founders of America definitely have a particular set of beliefs and carry forward a history. Like we do have actually a shared history as a people that carries forward. And typically people come here, and where it becomes more interesting for me is that history and culture. What's fascinating is people can join that history, but it's an American history. It's not where culture goes to die. It's where, you know, culture is. It's not where culture goes to die and then is now empty. I think it's actually you adopt the history going forward, and it's a building history, but it's still the American history. I kind of disagree with the idea of just, oh yeah, we lose all the gods in our culture, and now we just believe in media and money is the, and everything is just dead, dead culture, dead belief. And like the idea of like, we believe in Santa Claus more than we actually do in Jesus. I don't know if I really buy that aspect of it. So it deals into that. I don't know if how much of that is just like the cynical question of we actually just, belief is, everyone's faking it. When some people say they believe in anything, they're actually all just bullshitting you, and it's just corporatism, man. That was kind of my feeling going through it. I don't, like, it's a point to make. It's interesting. Definitely execution. I like some aspects of it, but I don't know if I'm going to give it, like, a floored. Because ultimately, when I come down to it, I'm going like, okay, Neil Gaiman's saying that Americans don't really believe much of anything other than corporatism. What it kind of comes down to.
I know you're not going to say this is floored. My job's to get this to a 3.75, okay? I'm going to try my hardest. But to that point, I think, okay, a couple things. The first with the example of just having a, you know, you don't think, Neil Gaiman kind of having a cynical view of not everybody is just, doesn't believe in Jesus and only believes in the corporate thing. I think one thing with books that, I think most books do that, you put the extreme, like in the fantasy, you look at, okay, what if we take this old God, new God concept and look at America in this lens? So we're viewing this through Neil Gaiman's view of like, okay, if we're taking the extreme of the argument of we only believe in the media and television and all that, which there's some truth to that. No, it doesn't mean every American just doesn't believe in actual God and have religious beliefs of their own, but there's some truth in how much do we value with our time and, you know, look at our cell phone more than we go to church if we're religious. How much do we not practice what we preach, essentially? You know, mm-hmm. So there's that portion, but also with your point on the founding and that America can have a culture of its own, I think that's the different perspective I got here, where our founding itself was a redefinition. So I think that when all of the ancestors here in America all had to come to America, versus you can look at histories in Europe and find, you could find a shack that's older than the oldest thing in America that we kind of have here, where you can go into some other country. They have a history that goes to ancient Egypt, to go ancient Greece. You can look thousands of years, where America, we kind of have a very much more narrow version of how long our history is. Not to say we don't have a history. I think more what Neil Gaiman's getting at is the founders came here, created this new, hey, we have our beliefs. America has life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. We have these core beliefs through a constitution. Like that doesn't change. Like land of opportunity, land of the free and brave. It's more so that part of our values and what we espouse also incentivizes individuality and people to come to America to redefine themselves. Like part of America is like, hey, come and make yourself, you know, pull yourself up by the bootstraps or make yourself of you will, where in our culture, I think he highlights we can be more individualistic than other cultures, which can be more family oriented. Whereas you can have, it's kind of typical generalizing here for an American to move out as soon as you're 18, like go get a job, you're old enough now, da 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 da. There could be more expectations. Whereas other cultures where they want you to stay until you're like late 20s. I wish my parents loved me that much. But I think with that founding point, so I don't disagree with you or Neil Gaiman. I think there's elements of both. I just think he makes me think a shit ton about that that perspective of America and going, you know what, there can be value in both what you're saying and what he's saying, where yes, we can have part of a shared culture and history, but also it's always redefining. And I think the point he's making isn't just cynical. It's not just that going forward, like we don't have anything in the past. I think he's making a point that, hey, there's some gods that we should still believe in, but there's some gods in the past that we shouldn't. Like as America, the fact that we can redefine and go, hey, slavery was a fucking huge mistake, but then we can look back to something that was positive, like, you know, we should stick to the pursuit of happiness point, you know,
think Neil Gaiman even goes into the positive nature. It's more of a, hey, look at all these different cultures that America killed off, and look at, like, where culture and, like, America is the place where culture and history goes to die, and that the Native Americans have this rich culture, these gods and everything, and then America, and it's all dead, and it sucks.
I disagree because
same thing with you know, this is more like the obvious point, but the plot line we get here is pair of twins become slaves, sold off in the African slave trade, and come to America. They start trying to keep their culture and keep their history, and it struggles to the point of like, and then it dies. And that they are a people lost, that lose their history, that lose their culture, and ultimately, and like, bummer, sad. That was the repeated theme throughout basically all of it, all of the different cultures. And instead of, so like, that's a point to make. The reason why I'm not going, it's Florida, I get it. And well, I don't think there's much to think. I don't think the book is really saying anything past that of America's the place where other people's histories and cultures go to die.
So that's a great point to make. The reason I hard disagree is the point this book floored me was, I got all the God stuff and I loved all that. The point where it floored me was the lakeside part of it, where it takes all of that and it does the opposite, whereas all the gods came to die with all these other cultures, but then we look at a town that remained the same for hundreds of years and was always keeping to tradition, but they had to sacrifice for the greater good. They had to sacrifice a child to keep and maintain what was theirs, and wanted to keep to everything in this lakeside town, and that it was showing how that keeping things always the same can come at a cost, at some sort of cost, where at this town it was kind of the metaphor was literally killing a child to maintain what was the same in America. Whereas the kind of tragedy, but also the positives that you get, that change will come to a town like this. Like, hey, it's a good, emphasizing like, hey, this is a good
town. It's a good thing that other places get to have a culture and history of the gods, but not okay for America to actually keep history and traditions. And is that what the book's saying? Like, America shouldn't have their cultures and traditions, and they should always be changing versus other places get to keep and stay the same and have a history and culture.
Well, I don't think it's saying anything about other places, because we only get America's point of view here of like, hey, what does it look like coming to America, and how do we define ourselves? And when it comes to this lakeside town and the tradition, why I think this connects with No Country for Old Men, not to super spoil that for anybody, but the thing about No Country for Old Men that also floors me with its message is that you kind of, the next generation takes a lead. So as America, it's not just like, you have to fight for your traditions and fight for your change with each new generation. You know, you're one generation away from, what's that quote? One generation away from tyranny, or whatever it might be.
Yeah,
but
something like that.
In that way of like, you can even change generation to generation. So what we see in Lakeside, what we see in that town is it's a good town for hundreds of years. And you kind of have this facade of it being good. This facade of convincing ourselves it's good. We don't want anything to change about the town. So I think Neil Gaiman is making a statement on change itself. Like, hey, change comes regardless of any... You can't ever preserve something completely. So nothing's ever going to stay the same, but it doesn't mean you don't just go in an endless going forward action. There's a way, I think Neil Gaiman, what he's getting at is, yes, the old gods are dying out, new gods replace them, but more so focusing on what new gods should replace them. Like, should Hinzelmann, that god, is that a good god to value? The one that's sacrificing children every year.
To that point then, what god that does Neil Gaiman actually say should stay around? What should they believe in? Is there anything? It seems to me it's more of just belief in things suck, and anything that stays the same that is bad. And it's just a constant state of progress, and that progress toward crap.
I think Shadow is where he takes the character Shadow, and kind of like with Terry Pratchett's book Small Gods, where... keeping spoiler free, but Ohm and Brother have this relationship, which won't get into, but where Shadow takes a different route than Small Gods and Terry Pratchett. Shadow has this personality to him where he doesn't have like a morality framework. He kind of has principles where, like, hey, if someone does something good for him, he'll do it for them. I think what Neil Gaiman's getting at, he's showing you what the bad examples are. Like, hey, bad example, bad example, bad example. So what's something good to reach? So if we see a lot of, I guess as a good value is sometimes people grow up with good parents or bad parents. Sometimes there's value in having good parents and you're raised well and you become a good person. But just as many success stories of where people are raised by bad parents and have a bad childhood, but they turn out to be the best people because they were shown what not to do. They were shown, hey, here's an example of the things that you are vices and you ought not to do, and this is how you become better. So Shadow in that way sees a lot of examples of what not, he's not the most perfect moral person. He has a ton of flaws. But Shadow sees a bunch of examples of what not to do. And this is getting at some of the messages I love the most, which Hitchhikers saying sometimes the question's more important than the answer itself. But I think Neil Gaiman's asking questions and Shadow's asking questions of what is right. It's not giving you an answer like, hey, here's the thing to believe in. I'm going to preach at you my message of believe in, insert political statement, insert belief. I think it would make a worse book if he's going, this is the thing. Instead of worshiping media, worship underage children. Like, sorry, Neil Gaiman. No, I'm not sorry. So,
yeah, not sorry, Neil Gaiman.
But I think he makes a great point with leaving it more ambiguous to what, asking yourself the question of what should you value. These are the things being pushed at you. These are the things that society is telling you to value, value, value.
See, I don't even be reflective. It's that. It's more of belief is foolish. I think it's more of just progress for progress's sake. Everything's, anything that stays the same is bad. History is just a series of death, then oppression, and then we move on. And Shadow being the example of believes in really nothing and he's empty. And what do we get? I don't see any kind of interesting after, like, where some, oh, what, like a positive aspect here, a negative, a twist, something meaty to chew on. I'm just seeing ultimate negatives of suck, suck, suck. Like, it, there's nothing to believe in. Belief is foolish. It's just manipulation. And even when, hey, look, we have good thing, we're a town that is trying to hold on to their way of life, that actually sucks. It comes at the debt. Like, trying to preserve onto something good is actually at the sacrifice of small children. Ultimate. And just, even when it's good, actually it's bad. And you know what? Even, and in the book, they talked about how the town is end, like, okay, the god is dead.
It's a good
town. The good town. It's a good town.
It's a good town.
They kill the god.
The best town.
They kill the god, and basically it says, like, yeah, it's gonna, the town's gonna suck now. It's not gonna be a good town anymore. It's gonna move on, and it's you're probably gonna have a lot more unemployment, or, you know, people are gonna move away. There's probably gonna be more chaos and murder and things, and you're probably gonna go down the wayside the same as the mining town that's now a ghost town. As this, like, that's your future now. Staying the same, bad. Progress is also probably just going to suck. It's not going to be good. I look at all of that, and I'm going, okay, cool. I just see negative. And that's where I'm like, it's somewhat interesting to think about.
But you
also
love the movie No Country for Old Men, though.
Yeah, I feel like there's something more interesting to think about there.
I think some of the through line with those messages is, No Country for Old Men's getting at the point that time changes, new generation comes, and things, it's literally No Country for Old Men. It's not your generation anymore. It passes on to this new crime. What is this new world that is being created? It's a very similar message as that. And one of the through lines with American Gods is, even though, yeah, sure, it has a cynical take, and I think that's the difference here too, is with your thought provokingness on it, maybe you wanted more of something that you wanted more of a bittersweetness. Like, you wanted something positive out of it, like a bring up your
mainly
spirits.
Just something more to think. But to this point, after the book is done, I didn't think about it anymore. I'm like,
fair enough.
I get it. Progress sucks. Staying the same sucks. Marching ever forward. And okay. I think I got the point of the book, and then just, I'm not really thinking about it anymore.
I think some of it's
so I want something meaty of, like, something that would question, like, I would start to question, or I would be interested in knowing more about. And, like, No Country for Old Men is in many ways thought provoking on an individual character basis of how could someone think that way. It's like, ultimately, I'm interested in it on a more character study. Not necessarily, hey, the next generation. Like, if I were to just boil it down, like, you know, next generation marches on. Like, it's changing. It's No Country for Old Men.
Like, well, you can reduce anything like that.
Exactly.
Like, you can reduce American Gods
more
to that.
But I think there's more to that movie than that. I'm trying to find more in this, and I just haven't really thought.
I do think they're very similar. Like, there's more to No Country for Old Men as there is with.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yes, like Small Gods, one of the reasons you and I love that book is, I think on a surface level for Small Gods, you can very much look at it as just an anti-God, anti-belief book, which as agnostics, we find there's so much more than that. I think that the layer beneath with American Gods, yes, it's cynical. Yes, there's it's dark humor. It's very much, it takes this in a darker light. So we're seeing the perspective of gods that are being destroyed. I think part of what Neil Gaiman's saying is, the old gods that are being destroyed, what we're replacing them with, is both a warning, but also is it a never-ending cycle of constantly things are changing? Will Lakeside change and become, like, you know, will it just become a bad town, no longer good, you can't preserve this forever? Part of it is going, okay, all these old gods from Atlantic slave trade, from Bering Strait, from Leif Erikson, all the different gods that they're no longer believing in, was there value in them? Or I'm asking myself, when the conversation happened with Wednesday and Easter, of what we're actually believing ourselves, I think there's a deeper message about there's some selfishness in belief. Like belief is a two-way street, and a lot of the times we can be selfish in how we believe in things and what we value. And do I really value Christmas? December comes up. Do I value Christmas itself, or do I value I get to see family, I get to open presents? Like, what does it look like in the culture? And I think with America, sure, it could be, you can reduce it into, like, you know, it's corporatism and he's looking at media, TV being bad. I could totally see that. If you didn't find a deeper level to that, sure, I think it just didn't connect. That's fair enough. I think with all those different aspects of looking at how you can reflect, what I love out of a book is both it keeps it a bit ambiguous with you don't have a definitive answer, because I think, again, if he gives you this is the thing to believe and this is what America is, the point of the book is to keep it to that America is redefining, to where it could redefine good or bad. And in the 2000s in here, are we in a bad time of redefining? You know, we kind of have different generations and eras where things can go a darker turn or positive turn. What kind of mood is there? And hey, with new social media, kind of looking at this as a warning, like, hey, is this going to be a bad era in America? Is this going to be a bad thing of what, are we more selfish, individualistic? The good thing to that, the kind of between the lines that I read.
There's the thing. You're talking about the answer is not given to you. I feel like Neil Gaiman gave an answer. That's the problem.
What do you think he gave as an answer?
That belief is self, like there is nothing into belief. Like it is always going to die, that there is no such thing as real convictions. It's all just selfishness, and that people will forget. It's about, basically, it's just corporatism, convenience, and oppression and manipulation. Like I feel it gives just the negative answer. I don't think there is like anything else other than that. It's just a series of negatives. And there isn't a different answer to glean from this book in particular. Like maybe think about it yourself. Sure, you come up with your own ideas. But I think Neil Gaiman already gives the answer.
And the answer is to just not believe. That's what you got from it?
Basically. That belief is manipulation and foolhardy. That there is nothing more to it.
Mm. So when you were reading this, you were looking at the old gods versus, like, the old gods being manipulative with Wednesday, Odin, and Loki. They were manipulating this, like, the whole thing's about magic and coin tricks and kind of this being symbolic of the book, these coin tricks and misdirection and misleading. A lot of that has to do with Shadow and his coin tricks, but also Odin and the way that he did the, what was it called? The double backstab, the two-sider.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the term?
the
twist, the double agent thing.
Sure.
But you get the point. So I guess when I was reading, when I read a book like this, a lot of what I enjoy about stuff like Piranesi or books like that, where you can, I guess, two different readers here, you can read into this book and see, like, you know, it's saying that belief is bad and selfish, which I agree with you. It's saying belief is bad and selfish, and I think there's more to it. And that even that point that you're discussing is already interesting enough to floor me. Like, where the point that you're talking about, how he's emphasizing how belief is selfish and new things change, like, already I'm fascinated by that discussion. But then I'm fascinated by the next layer it goes, where, hey, if belief is selfish, if this is what we really believe in, if it's looking at America and reducing it, but also showing us two sides. It's showing us from a God's perspective. It's showing us from a micro, small town's perspective of what do we value and what better No Country for Old Men, as we, I don't want to keep hammering in that point, but if it's showing that from all those angles, then what it's, I'm asking myself throughout the book of, do I ever fall into those vices? Do I ever fall into thinking that I am believing something, but how truly am I convicted in my beliefs? How truly do I actually practice what I preach? How often do I think, you know, I'm thinking about the stories about all these people that came to America, and something that something that they valued or believed in and just gets lost with time. There's a depressing thing about that, but it's also a warning to be like, hey, maybe it's not a good thing to get rid of all these, to get rid of these things that you held dear.
Yeah.
And so I'm reading.
It's bad and sad when these cultures like lose their history and their culture and their beliefs. And then it's also bad if we keep those beliefs and trying to hold on to something and culture. So it's bad either way.
Sorry. So it's bad if you lose it on that.
Lakeside is an example on that. Keeping to the old ways, keeping to tradition comes at severe cost, and that progress marches on, and you can't keep something the same for decades. You can't do it. But also, it's sad when other cultures try to do that exact same thing, and it's inevitable. It's just the endless march toward progress and something.
I think
new.
There's sadness in both, where the sadness in Lakeside is it was seen as a good and valuable time. Like when we first go to Lakeside, it's cozy, this atmosphere, it feels like America, and even Henselman himself is a great guy, and the cop is the epitome of just a fantastic cop, fantastic guy. You feel good being in Lakeside. I think there's part of that, like, it does feel good to even though we don't know the dirty things that are happening behind closed doors, there's like a happiness to that that we are keeping to the tradition here. Like, mm-hmm. In a way, it was like, man, I'm happy, this is good, and then finding out what was the cost of that happiness. But in the same way, where the old gods or the gods coming and being changed there, I think just the point that I find more interesting is whether you're in a town in America and entrenched in there and trying to keep it the same for 100 years, or you're coming from a different culture and trying to preserve your gods. Everyone coming to America, your gods can change based on what the new gods of the time are. And it's showing a warning of what are these new gods. And regardless of you believed in the god that's thousands of years old from Africa or from Asia, et cetera, you don't believe in them anymore. Even the gods we try to believe in America can quickly go awry. Even something that could be seen more Judeo-Christian, and the Easter Bunny is something that we kind of believe in that because it's a Judeo-Christian country. Don't we believe in that? But do we actually believe in that? It's just the different layers.
Christmas being the best example of it, supposed to be the holiday of, you know, Christ being born.
Yeah.
And a lot of criticism could be said now of, do people believe that Christ is born, or is it you just want presents? You're going through the motions. You're putting on the star on the tree is supposed to be significant to, you know, basically
for people's Instagram pics.
Yeah. Where it's supposed to be the star that the three followers, used to find baby Jesus.
Yeah.
But now it's just pretty star, top of the tree.
I guess this is, I think we come down to our disagreement. Existentialism to me isn't cynical. Nihilism is cynical to me. I don't see this as a nihilistic book. I see it as an existential book. Whereas some of my favorite movies, like Everything Ever All at Once, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, it's not presenting in a nothing matters nihilism. It's presenting it more of a cynical take of like, hey, if God is dead, as Nietzsche says, if God is dead, what do we replace God with? And instead of taking that in the depressing route, I take this in more of an opportunity to reflect and an opportunity to be more existential. No, it doesn't answer. It doesn't say, hey, here's your God instead. It doesn't say this is the God to believe in. It just makes me reflect about everything we just discussed. So and not to keep it repetitive, but I think, would you agree that's your disagreement? You see it as more of a cynical nihilistic. I see it as cynical existential.
Sure.
I think ultimately,
I feel it very much dismisses the idea of belief in general, and history is just, you know, oppression, and that's it. That everything is just power. Power plays, oppression. No one really believes anything. And I just see it more as a nihilistic book.
That's a valid interpretation. Yeah. So I see why you think that.
There's stuff to think about. That's why I'm not saying like it's bad. Like there's something clearly stuff to think about and talk about. But I know after this book, I'm not going to really think about it that much afterwards.
I think we had a great discussion regardless. I thought it was a great discussion.
At very least,
it's a message heavy where you can at least talk about it and like disagree.
It's a strong 3.5.
Damn it, I didn't get you to 3.75. Are you? Fuck. You know what? Okay, last point that I wanted to make on thought-provoking, because I think we spent, oh boy, holy crap, that's a long time on thought-provoking. Strap in, folks! Okay, so people are going to be so pissed. They're like, I think they repeated themselves 20 times.
Probably.
Yeah, we need to get better at
Why can't they say the point once and then the other person just understand and move on?
And move on. But I think, yeah. But last point that doesn't repeat anything is the other thought-provoking point of this, just in the information-wise of reading about all these new gods, I was constantly, kind of like how you were throughout the Silmarillion or Lord of the Rings, looking back and going, oh, what happened to the Ents? I was doing that with this book, where any time that there was a new god mentioned or some theory, like I never knew that the middle of America was a pig farmer who said, no, I don't want a monument here. Kick rocks. And so we had to build the monument of the middle of America several miles north, or learning about that there's theories about Polynesians who came to the Americas, and there's actually maybe some credible information that I found online of maybe there's Polynesians that interacted with South Americans, and then did the Japanese actually come to America, or who inhabited the island of Japan actually come to America? But I was in rabbit holes galore with this book, but I felt like we had to talk about it. I gave it 5 stars, so that's my category. I loved it.
I get it, okay. Especially with how much this made you think and go into research other things. Fair enough.
So do we want to start boring people and on? Sorry, everybody. We have fun. So characters. What did you rate characters out of 5 stars?
Give it a 4 out of 5 stars.
I gave 4.25. Really great for me. Great for you.
Yeah, great.
We're closer. we're getting closer.
The
main
thing is the characters are just really well-defined. They have a great voice to them immediately. There's especially some characters that, like, they're introduced and you understand them and you want to know more about them. And, like, ultimately, I think he just does such a great job of making the characters feel alive rather than just vehicle for plot device. It doesn't feel that way. Like, the cop feels real. The
Chad Mulligan, was that his name?
Chad Mulligan.
I believe so.
You have the hitchhiker girl, feels real and well-defined. Just a lot of them feel like a very good archetype, that the characters are archetypal characters. They're not super complex and different and, like, nuanced, but they just feel real and alive anyway. The gods themselves are archetypical. Of course, they should be. Like, they are elements created basically from belief. Fair enough. They, you know, the leprechaun, angry.
Yeah, yeah.
Angry, money, got it. Understand. He's a drunk Irishman. Enough said. Yeah. All right. He's a stereotype. Wednesday, got, you know, one-eyed god, power, the trickster.
Yeah.
Get it. So, great characters overall. Shadows started off but turned into a interesting character to follow. And how'd you view
Shadow? What do you think made up his character? If you could explain him.
For a most part, he feels kind of like a plot vehicle until you start just going the mystery surrounding him, and he's just weird. He's odd. Like, even other people start thinking, like, something's off with this guy.
Mm.
And so that mystery element kind of took me along. So why is he act so cold and disconnected from his wife's death?
And that's weird. She cheats on him and gets killed and dies. And he finds this out, and what his reaction is strange, right?
Yeah, not like he's not completely detached of, like, I feel nothing. I am emotionless robot. He feels it. He feels sad. He's like, yeah, I feel betrayed, and it's uncomfortable for me. But everything's just muted with him. It's weird.
He doesn't express his emotions, but you see at a certain point he was about to kill himself.
Yeah, I think part of that is the gods were trying to possess and manipulate him. Part of that.
I think a lot with this, the gods kind of push you a little bit. Like with Laura, her character, Dennis, shout out to Dennis from our Patreon, who made a fantastic point with Laura, who Laura cheats on him and has been cheating on him for years and becomes this ghost. And we find out at the end of the story that Odin pushed Laura or convinced Laura to not, if there was a knob, pushed the knob a bit just to make Laura more inclined to cheat on Shadow. And we see Laura throughout the book cares deeply about Shadow, but she cheated him on him at the same time. And I think
this another aspect of separate art from the artist, because of his open relationship status, I'm wondering how much of Neil Gaiman's view of sex just being
just sex
and separating the act from the connection from it. I'm wondering if part of that is it. Ultimately, the book goes in a different direction, but I was brought when that happened and just how the subject was handled between the two characters. I'm wondering. I was thinking about the author as well at that time.
Gotcha.
But that's a point. It's not, I'm not saying that Neil Gaiman was like, oh yeah, I'm interjecting my morality of it in this book. I don't think he did that, but it did make me think about his personal relationships as
well. Just one of those moments that took you out.
Yeah. Just wanted to mention as well, separating the art from the artist. That's all I wanted to mention about it.
I think with Laura, that Laura Shadow relationship, this two paragraphs here, which sums up perfectly both the resentment she feels for him, but also the relationship dynamic with them, that I think this is the moment where it hit for me, that Shadow's different, that Laura's... Can I read this real quick? So this is two paragraphs where Laura is coming to Shadow and just basically saying, hey, I love you, but this is why I cheated in a way. So she says this, I love you, she said dispassionately. You're my puppy, but when you're really dead, you get to see things clear. It's like there isn't anyone there, you know? You're like this big, solid, man-shaped hole in the world, she frowned. Even when we were together, I loved being with you because you adored me and you would do anything for me. But sometimes I'd go into a room and I wouldn't think there was anybody in there. And I'd turn the light on or I'd turn the light off and I'd realize that you were in there, sitting on your own, not reading, not watching TV, not doing anything. She hugged him then, as if to take the sting from her words, and she said, the best thing about Robbie's the person she cheated on with, was that he was somebody. He was a jerk sometimes, and he could be a joke, and he loved to have mirrors around when we made love so he could watch himself fucking me, but he was a live puppy. He wanted things. He filled the space. She stopped, looking up at him, tipped her head a little to one side. I'm sorry, did I hurt your feelings? And that reflective thing there, on one hand, you go like, Laura, that doesn't justify cheating. So on the one hand, it shows that, but on the second, it shows she did have resentment for Shadow, even though if Odin pushed the knob a bit to get Laura to cheat, because he manipulated, definitely did that, but there was still the resentment in Laura that gave her the character motivation to have the ability, because it's not like Odin could flip your emotions from you love Shadow to you hate Shadow. She had this deep hidden resentment about him, loved him deeply, but there was resentment enough to push her to cheat.
Well, it's also maybe not even resentment. It's more of she doesn't respect him or see him as a person. Like she said there, I loved you because you adored me. That's not, to me, that's a different form of love. That's someone that doesn't particularly respect you. She loves him because of how he treats her. But then absent of that, what is there? He's just a vehicle.
You fill the space.
You fill the space and you adore me, and it's just give to me. And then without that, gone. When that's gone, there's nothing. And I'm resentful of that. So it's cynical take on that relationship particularly. And it's more also on Shadow himself, of his personality is off. He's weird.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not Laura twisting it completely, because
she's accurate.
She's accurate on kind of how Shadow is. Like, I could totally see that is Shadow's personality.
Yeah,
he'll shower your praise, but ultimately, what is left of him? What is him as a person to attach to?
He's more a shadow than a person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so she looked at him more as her shadow rather than his own person in his own right.
Yeah. And that whole dialogue between the two, and showing how Shadow both has, again, she calls him my puppy. It's a very, it's, you know, people have their terms of endearment, but it's more, more of a dominating term. Mm-hmm. Or it's a more of a looking at you maybe lesser. even. But just the term puppy kind of shows you their relationship dynamic where...
endearment, but clear hierarchy.
Yeah.
And, yeah. A hierarchy that...
like you could say...
is lacking in some deal of respect.
Yeah, like you put a puppy on a leash.
Mm-hmm.
You put like your partner shouldn't be like your little plaything. Your partner should be on your like respected. Your
confidant.
You're not just cohabitating. You are one. You're not a dog. You're not like anyways. But we
get it. Play names are also just
yeah. And people say like you could say puppy in maybe an endearing way of like puppy.
Yeah, no.
But the way that Laura is saying it is...
it's a combination of the term that she calls him and also how she treats him.
Yes.
And how she talks about him. It's a combination of things.
And at the same time, she's very... Dennis and the Patreon changed my mind about her a bit, where I kind of viewed Laura negatively because she cheated. She said this stuff to... but I mean, throughout the whole book, she truly does... is there for Shadow, and she's more complicated than just cheated, wife that cheated for an inciting incident. She's way more complicated than that she has redeemable qualities, but also she both is treating Shadow in a way that you don't love because you're like, man, I wish that relationship wasn't like that, but also she deeply cares for Shadow, so she's really layered, and mm-hmm. I loved reading her just as much as, like you said, Chad, who the cop, just super clear.
Yeah.
Great guy. The way he reacts to things, the stories he had in the small town of like, hey, the worst thing we had was some guy came in with a shotgun. I convinced him out of it. It was fine. Just he's got this very, like, the epitome of what you should be as a cop. It feels good.
Yeah. Well, the nice small town cop. He's there to just smooth things over, be the calm guy in a chaotic room.
I feel like that character was most similar to you. If we could pull any out, you were Chad.
You're Laura.
I'm puppy.
You're a puppy.
Roof, roof. So no. some other characters to mention. Obviously, we have all the gods with Wednesday and Hinzelman, who turn out to be...
I see you as the leprechaun.
That's worse.
The reason why you don't drink, you're an angry drunk.
I thought it was more of like a, hey, buddy,
Oh, I know. I'm just lying about it.
Oh, you're just
I'm lying for the audience. It's fine.
Apparently,
I'm just, you know, spreading the lies.
Seeding in enough truths and lies, nobody will know.
Exactly.
No one can distinguish with what they really believe. You know, what do you believe, Rich?
At one point, I said you're just like, oh, you're a touchy drunk. You're a talkative drunk. Now I say you're an angry drunk.
Maybe. Now that'll be me. I'll turn into angry drunk.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds good. But like the book, you don't know what to believe. It's
Who knows?
So there's also Hinzelman, who I thought, I didn't really expect him to be the one that did it in the end. It kind of caught me off. I wasn't thinking about the mystery that often because it wasn't a focal point. But when it was Hinzelman and seeing his what's the word for the god he was? Starts with an E or a D.
He wasn't even a god. He was something else. He like was
One of those creature.
A kobold.
Yes, kobold. But yeah, he was interesting. We also had Chernobog, Sam, the hitchhiker.
Yeah.
I
liked Sam a lot.
A lot of spunk.
Her whole speech was... it's a little long.
I wanted to read it.
Go ahead.
No, I won't read it. It's fine. I apparently
that speech is very much a Neil Gaiman thing. Like, Neil Gaiman likes to do that, like, long-winded...
emphasizing a point.
Yeah, he pontificates.
Good job.
Yeah.
Good job. Yes, that long... paragraph, that long thing you're referring to is where Shadow and her are talking, and Shadow says, hey, you wouldn't believe me if I told you about my past, essentially.
Yeah, she's like, I believe.
And Sam goes, I believe in both sex became worse after drive-in theaters were gone, and I also believe that sex is best it's ever been, and I also don't believe in Santa, but I really do believe. It's, she has conflicting beliefs constantly and just going, I believe, and I believe, and I believe, and I believe the moon landing was fake and that the earth is round, and I believe, like, she would just kind of go into circles of how she can believe anything. And again, I think that was more so from the message portion, which we won't go into, but he does that. He pontificates a lot to emphasize his points, and Sam was one version of that. I love that. that section. But do you want to move on to plot?
Sure.
What did you give plot? Is this the one that increased the most?
No, that'll be world.
World? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So what did you give plot out of 5 stars?
I give it a 4 out of 5. I think ultimately things came together to a very satisfying way. Very, very great plot.
I gave a 4.5 spectacular, and I think we'll agree for the most part here. So what, do you want to go into that of what, why you gave it a 4 and why I think, why you think I gave it too high? Start arguing. Get angry.
Yeah.
Get, you know, I'm the angry drunken leprechaun, so I'll get angry.
Yeah, you put the book down several times and you could actually, clearly there's some like stuff that it could be.
My note here is I gave 0.25 down for every time I put it down. But be Chad, be nice, be the nice old cop. Why did you give it a 4?
Ultimately, it's maybe the beginning feels a little meandering, but at a certain point, the different plot lines kind of all come together where you care about the story, the end, and that there is a satisfying conclusion to everything, and that all the pieces do come together. And some pieces that you didn't know were on the board. So it's one of those things of you, in the beginning, you feel like you're building this puzzle and you think it's about, oh, this god battle. And ultimately, the reason why it was easy to put down is because I don't care. I don't care about their god battle. Doesn't matter. It feels empty. But then we start getting more mysteries of the human characters. Laura, we get Lakeside Town. We have the mystery behind the agents who keep trying to get Shadow. And they're like, now Shadow's being hunted down. Why is he important? There's some significance to him. All those things come together with a really satisfying conclusion, and ultimately the puzzle that you thought was building, you thought you were building to, became something completely different, and that was satisfying. So, came together in a great way.
I totally agreed with that. If we're to break down plots like Sanderson does and promise, progress, and payoff, the promise was, you know, it meandered a bit, but I think it did promise correctly. It promised correctly that the payoff wasn't going to be this big god battle. You didn't get to the god battle and go, oh, I missed out. I missed out on some cool action. Not for 1 second did we think that was going to happen. So it properly promised that and set up that this is a story that's not about your action. It's not going to be about this god battle. So when, really it promises, it sets up very early on the god Odin and talking about the story about how the fiddle conner, the con artist who conned out for fiddles, that story that Wednesday said, and he was basically telling some Shadow some story about how there was double, there's two sides to the con. It's not one con, man. There's always somebody in on it. And set up perfectly and promise us, okay, we got the answer from the villain in the first couple. It's perfectly set up where, okay, it's promised that there's going to be a twist, but we didn't even see the twist coming. You see it in hindsight, like, ah, it was right before me the whole time, which is why that payoff comes together. But we see, okay, set up from the start with Shadow loving coin tricks and misdirection, and really right in front of us there's this theme of misdirection, there's this theme of there being two people part of the con where we're led to believe one thing, and I think emphasizing like, hey, we're led to believe we're misdirected, much like the characters are also led to believe things.
We're led to believe it's building up of Odin needs, like, it's two men to the con, he always needs a partner. And yes, you think at the beginning, like, oh, it's Shadow. That's why he picked up Shadow. That's the whole reason he's going on this whole thing, is Shadow's supposed to be a part of the con.
Yeah.
He's actually the subject. He's the victim of the con. And so, yeah, that's a satisfying plot for it, and great revelation by the end.
And low-key, I don't know how I didn't get low-key from Low-Key Locksmith.
I did immediately.
I didn't. I was like, damn it, it's low-key. I missed it.
Now, here's the thing. I was 50-50. Yeah. For the whole time going, a lot of this book is silly and fantastical. And it's like, this could very much just be a stupid coincidence. And it would fit this story very well.
Yeah.
It's either Loki, the actual god of mischief, or it's just another silly coincidence in Shadow's silly coincidence-filled life.
Right. Like, you know why Wednesday's called Wednesday, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
no.
Oh, you don't know that?
The Wednesday, the actual one.
Wednesday Odin. So Wednesday, we get the word Wednesday from Odin's day. Yeah, so the like Thursday is Thor's days. Okay. Friday is like I think Freya is Friday or something like that. And but the different gods. So Wednesday is called Wednesday because he's Odin, and the word Wednesday comes from Odin's day is Wednesday.
Yeah,
that's just like etymology, or is that the right word? Etymology, where the
etymology.
Like,
yeah,
word how words were created in the past. Like that's where that came from. So he has that neat way of like showing low key locksmith Wednesday. It's like right in front of you the whole time. It's kind of cool. Hey, that deserves 0.25 on thought. I mean, you didn't know that. He taught you something. Neil Gaiman taught you something.
That goes into knowledge. The next category.
Knowledge. So, yes, with the plot, I think the biggest thing is just it was easier to put down a couple times, but I don't think when we're talking about plot, we're kind of rating, you know, would you make a ton of changes or would you make very few changes? Like, if I was authoring this book, what would I do differently? I mean, maybe change some things like, it meandered, the pacing could have been like there, that, you know, if I'm being very pretentious and going, maybe if this shifted, but as a whole story, like it weaves together the old gods and news and the small town, which I think the small town, as you pointed out, the human story really nailed it. And that I cared so much by the end, surprisingly. And then we get a bit of that payoff of, I just love how it ends with even Sam and Shadow, where they have that line, the Casablanca line, like, oh, we'll always have El Paso. Like, it doesn't, that relationship didn't even matter as well. It doesn't end us, everything and all the messages together, and it ended to emphasize, like, this is what the book was about. Like, you didn't come here for a big action battle, and just all fits like a knot, like a nicely tied knot.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Pretty great.
Pretty great. Really great?
Great.
4.25 means really great in our system. For those who don't know, we have the word. If you guys ever want to check out how we do our rating system, we had an episode out where we go into what we mean by our ratings. That's up there.
I think it's somewhere.
It's Rich has a nice thumbnail of him kind of looking like Charlie Day, all crazed.
Ah,
on the screen.
Yes, yeah, great, a fun thumbnail.
So now we go on to, I had one more thing to mention in the plots actually,
go ahead.
Because I wanted to ask you this. We read Molazin recently. We've read other books where characters die and come back and we don't like it. Why did it not bother you when Laura came back to life, when Shadow came back to life, when Wednesday was fake death and came back to life? Why did it not bother you? I was thinking about this deeply, but I want to see your perspective.
Because I don't particularly care about their death, and I don't care particularly about their rebirth. It sucks when a character comes back to life and the author puts a lot of time and emotion in how sad their death is. And then when it's taken, so that's the pull, is like you feel their death and you're emotionally invested in that. And then the rug pull of, haha, actually they're alive now or they're alive again. Normally it cheapens the death. And now it feels like, oh, you tricked me, and it's not enjoyable. In this case, like, the deaths aren't really, like, emotional in that sense. Like, you're not, it doesn't take, them coming back to life doesn't take away from their death. That, in many ways, all of them, their death is a plot point that leads into the next one. It's not an emotional scene.
Totally agree. The thought process I had really bounces right off of that, where I look at it the same way I look at a plot twist. Where if you're going to put a plot twist in a book or character death in a book, two things need to be required. One, that the plot twist makes sense. So the death makes sense in the story. Like logically, oh, okay, that meant to happen. Red Wedding, of course it happened because it was built up. Like the deaths here, of course that happened. It makes sense in the book. But secondly, the twist you do, the death you do, leads the book in a more interesting direction.
Yeah. So like, it doesn't make you go, oh, come on, or make you look poorly, or it takes away from a previous moment.
Exactly. Yes.
It's kind of like when a twist happens and you go, oh, it great. The first thing came to mind was Glass Onion.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
Twists were deliberately where it's not you looking back and the scene is now different. It's literally the scene is changed. Like he takes a scene and from the previous movie and then re-edits it for something else happened. It's different. So the director lied to me just completely. So it's not really a twist. It's just the movie's a liar.
And we get and we get to see like we couldn't solve the mystery on our own. Like things were blocked or hidden from us to where it wasn't that satisfaction of, ah, all comes together. It was presented in a different way.
It's even worse of, I'm keep remembering the scene of where, from that movie, the main detective is looking out from behind a bush at a character doing a scene. And so, like, they're watching a character, this whole thing that's happening. That's all you see. And then the later in the movie, the big reveal, the big, you know, twist, haha, here's what's going on. Jump back to that scene. And now another character like pops out from the bush as well. It's like you just lie. Like that didn't happen in the previous scene. You re-edit, you reshot it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's worse. Same thing of death. Of like death happens and then you go, oh, well, actually, they didn't die.
Oh, whoopsie. Yeah.
Not as good.
Yeah, I think that I was curious because we've talked about it recently on some of the podcast episodes. So that it worked for this one, and I think that's why.
Yeah, so. Especially in I didn't care about their I wasn't emotional at their death, wasn't emotional at their rebirth.
Yeah, and I think last point is I'm glad the Jesus chapter was removed. I don't think that would have worked in the book at all. I'm glad that he included it to be like, hey, I did think about it, but I didn't put it in the book. Great choice. That would have been really weird in a part full of myth. Like to bring Jesus, who a lot of Americans like obviously do believe, the point should be more mythos than it should be. Like you shouldn't just bring up modern. I mean, it's not like a modern religion. Just
real,
takes the
real belief and real religion.
Real convictions and beliefs, yeah. So, world building time. What did you give world building out of 5 stars? This is the one that increased the most.
Yep. Originally, immediately during the book club, before the book club happened, I gave it a 3.75. After the book club, I gave it a 4.5.
I gave it a 4.75. Nearly floored me.
Spectacular. For you. Yeah, no, spectacular.
What's the main reason for that change?
All the details on America and how America is described in the all how the small towns are done, the you know House on the Rock and all the details that go into it, the town of Cairo, not Cairo, Cairo, all of the details of the gods and it being explained on the real mythos behind it, that history, that stuff was great. Well described and made the America in this book feel like it's the actual America.
That whole thing, the atmosphere you're talking about, where nobody's looking at American gods for the magic system that's already in small gods. It's cool. I love the fact that gods get their belief from how many believers they have. Always a cool concept. But he was able to describe America like he'd actually been there, and he actually had, where Patrick Ruffus's review kind of went over. I won't read the whole description, but when he's describing the scenes to you of that cold snow and that how frigid it feels and on just the coldest day of the year and that middle America, how the House of Rock is described, puts you and immerses you in what America actually is. Like, he's British and he describes America better than... What would your description be? Give a sentence of America. Walk us through the woods, Rich. Oh, no, a winter day. Frigid cold.
It was a little nippy outside.
Did you do nippy outside and go like this? did you unintentionally twist your nipples? Replay that. Replay that. I want that in slow-mo, Cam. That was a twist. You said it's a little nippy.
It's a little nippy outside.
Great. Honestly, very visceral and descriptive. I loved it. Loved it.
Yeah.
But that's the reason why we're given world building highs. It just does an amazing job at making you feel like, hey, this is a real America. Holy crap, this feels very, very real right now.
Mm-hmm.
So want to go on to prose.
Yeah, dialogue and prose.
What did you give prose out of 5 stars?
4.25. I think it's really great. Really nice. Great.
4.75. Nearly flawless, nearly floored me. What did you think that was unique about his? This was our first Neil Gaiman. How did you read into it? Why did you think it was really great?
I really thought it was great due to description of everything going on. So great, great presence. The characters' dialogue had good, unique voices. Well structured. Ultimately, it's just a very clear, well written book. want to ask you on why do you think it's Nearly Perfect?
Yeah,
or so not nearly perfect.
Nearly floored me. Yeah,
Nearly floored you. Why did it nearly floor you?
So when we're looking at when judging pros is a tough thing. Like, oh, we're not writers, right?
Yeah.
So when we're looking at the pros, we kind of agreed upon this. But when I'm looking at the pros category too, it's does this author have a distinct voice of their own? Also, good. Is it well written first? And that means, are you describing the scenes well? All that, but also, if you pick up their book, can you tell, like, hey, this is a Pratchett book, this is a Gaiman book, this is this. They have their, nobody else could write a book like they can. And I think Neil Gaiman has this distinct voice and style where one of our indie author, Keith, shout out Keith, we just chatted with him the other day, was pointing out Neil Gaiman's use of commas even, where he has such a distinct style, that effective style, where he has a great use of commas. And also, I noticed a writing trick he uses where he'll say a phrase, but then he'll kind of have it in italics, an additional portion that adds more value to the phrase itself. He did that a ton of times, where it was like always effective, and it kind of gave a unique voice to Shadow and in this book. So despite this just being well written, where the scenes are I think the world works so well, he describes everything phenomenally. So that's on the one hand. Here I have a quick paragraph of just a side character who doesn't need much description, but this is how Neil Gaiman introduces him. He says this, and the Iceman, this is a character in the book. The Iceman was the same size and shape as a Coke machine, with blue eyes and hair so blonde it was almost white. Boom, done. On to the next scene. I get how Iceman looks, I get his visuals, and then never again do I need to talk about the Iceman. Or just he's effectively able to get across like a good analogy or a good metaphor analogy. He's able to get a good analogy and get that across. Like another scene that I have here, I can't even say the whole thing because it's like the whole description of walking through the winter wonderlands, essentially, and getting so damn cold. If anybody wants to check it out, it is on page... I forgot to write the damn page down. But I do just go on a Goodreads, look at Patrick Ruffus's review, and he posts the whole thing there. So it's a fantastically described. But while saying all this, why I didn't give it the 5, Rich?
Why didn't you?
I found a mistake.
Oh.
I found a mistake in the book.
You found a mistake.
I found a mistake.
Now, is it just you didn't like it, or is it an actual mistake?
I think it's an actual error. Are you ready for this? I'm going to read it to you.
This mistake is worth 0.25?
Not really.
He put the comma in the wrong place for you?
It's not a comma. It's not a comma. Okay. But also, it's not the 0.25. I think, you know, 5, again, it's, 5's tough. You know, I got to say that for the thought-provoking category. But
look, just so you're listening, if you put the colon wrong, that precludes you from doing an actual 5. Yeah?
I can't do it. This isn't why, but this is part of it. So I'm going to read this sentence. See if you agree, okay? The medical examiner looked at Shadow. "You working for the Jackal and Ibis?" he asked.
Explain.
Okay, so I think, so when it's saying the medical examiner looked at Shadow, "You working for Jackal and Ibis?" ended there rather than the "he asked," because it's redundant to say the medical examiner looked at Shadow, then after the quotations also to say "he asked," because obviously the person asking is the scene we get beforehand of the medical examiner looked at Shadow. Like, see like this, the medical examiner looked at Shadow. "You working for the Jackal and Ibis?" he asked. You don't need the "he asked," because in the prose itself, in the dialogue, we get the cue that the medical examiner's looking at Shadow. So kind of that repetition at the end there.
I think that's a stretch. One, it's not an error. If anything, it's, oh, you maybe could have.
I'm trying to have fun with this one.
Oh, okay.
But what are your actual thoughts, I guess?
I thought you were serious. That's the thing.
What would you have done with this sentence, Rich?
Kept it the same.
I actually would remove it, though.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Well, just
it could have been... It could have been someone else's. It's
well,
looked,
with,
yeah.
With pro, so okay, I'll be serious. Let's go serious for a second, then we could joke.
Okay,
the serious portion. I mean, why I pointed it out is when I'd love to read more. I'm trying to learn here more, so I'm dissecting the prose, being like, hey, how does he do this? How does he pull off this amazing prose? But when he has the medical examiner looked at Shadow, when you have that in a paragraph of like character looks at person, or like he looks at shadow, or the character's doing an action and then followed up by dialogue tag. Automatic, like there's tons of times where we're reading that and there's never the he asked, she asked, because you don't need it, because the portion you put before is like, okay, that person's talking, you know? So the, sure. That portion after, then the he asked portion, where then we have from shadow says, yes, said shadow. Good, more clarification, because, you know, making, there wasn't a thing like shadow.
But
looked
there's
into
only two people in the scene. Why would you need to say?
Yeah, you don't. Shadow said. You don't always have to. Like, it could have just been yes and then went on. But with, like, let's say it was like shadow looked to the trees. Yes, versus yes, said shadow. You know, if you're already saying the character's doing an action, we already assume they're the one speaking. If that makes sense. Because then the yes could have been an interruption by somebody else. It could have been like, yes, interrupted Laura, or da da da, whatever. So I think that's my one thing. Now, to be fun with it, that's why it's not a perfect book, because I found one thing that I just disagree with.
I found one thing. I think you could shave off those two words.
Two words in a book. I can't believe it. I should have taken two whole points off, two whole stars. All right, we have to keep it fun somehow. All right, that's what do you think about that? And also this whole American Gods episode, Rich, how do you think it went?
You know, in the spirit of this book, of we're worshiping consumerism, that Americans don't believe in anything, I think that you should worship us in the sense of buying our shit. We got bookmarks and hats and shirts, things. Link in the description if you want to support the channel and get a neat hat or cool bookmarks that we put a lot of work into. I'll mail you the bookmark. That's me. Send your belief in the form of cold hard cash.
Yes. What Gaiman meant is we lost our belief. We don't know what we believe in. You must choose carefully and choose us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, everybody. That was an American Gods episode. We hope you enjoyed. We'll see you next episode.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.